of the game is the hardest to track. Now, all animals are survival trained. They've got acute sense of smell, hearing, eyesight, and you've got to pit your wits against them. It's a full-time job. Once you've established a survival camp, okay, put out your trap lines. Don't expect success straight away. If you're lucky enough, something to bait the trap with, great, but after time, you're not. So what we teach for trapping is a small snare made out of brass wire. The animal goes in, ties up around its neck. You've got a strangle. To make that more efficient, if I bend down a sapling, a simple mechanism, a stick in the ground, this held down like this, the snare, the animal goes in now. Not only have you got a strangle, it flicks up in the air, you've got it with a tangle. In the event of a big rock balanced on a mechanism, the animal takes the bait, it falls on him, you've got a mangle, and in the event of a fishnet, you've got a tangle, okay? So mangle, dangle, tangle, strangle. This is the mechanisms for catching game. Okay, you've got the animal. What's the most nutritious part of the animal?
Heart. Eyes.
Keep the eyes in, they see you for a week. It's the liver, okay, liver. And if you can eat the liver raw, you've got to get maximum nutrition. Now, by cooking some things, you do destroy vitamin content. But in many, especially roots, eating the roots, unless you cook them, can be toxic, or it don't release the sugars and the starches in it so we can get nourishment, get me? So what we try to do is, with all our meats in that, don't matter if it's gone off, we can handle that as long as we boil it thoroughly. And what we do, we boil it, bring it off the boil, then we start adding our fungi, if we've got it, and plants. Now, plants are rich in vitamin C. Now, vitamin C is not water soluble, so if I boil it, I destroy the vitamin content. So I let the water come off the boil, then I'll seep all my plants in, like nettles, things like this, and that way I'll get maximum nutrition. Does that make sense? Okay, so the liver. Now, imagine you put all your traps out, and you go and check them, and you've got a 400-pound gorilla trapped by his arm. He's going to be pretty upset. What are you going to do? What to do? Run. You're starving hungry. If you sat there and watched him, he'd outlast you by years. If you throw a rock, he'd throw back a boulder. What are you going to do? I'll give you the solution. Use your mate. Yeah. Say, go on, son. You can do it. Okay. Always use your mate. Be very wary of any animal that's trapped. Squirrels, they're fierce. They might be small, but they're absolutely fierce. And so be careful. If you're going to handle game, make sure it is dead before you want to pick it up, etc. Okay? Like I say, get your mate to do it if you can't. Okay, you still with me then? You still comfy? Okay, I will carry on. I'm exhausted. This is the hardest I've worked all year. Well, 10 years. We've done protection, location, acquisition, water and food. Now, navigation. What we say is you can go north with a touch of east, south with a touch of west. You cannot go north with a touch of south. Get me? And I must admit, I've never been lost in my life, just geographically embarrassed, okay? And I guess we've all done it. And now with GPS, it tells you exactly where you are. It's a forgotten art, navigation. But you must have the ability to retain orientation. You need coordination as well. My tongue ain't coordinating with my brain at the moment, okay? Always retain orientation. Now, in this country, we got the sun most of the time, or some of the time, and it rises in the east and it sets on the west. Do you all agree with this? Southern hemisphere, what does it do? It does exactly the same. Are you all familiar with the shadow tip method? Okay, you put a stick in, observe the shadow. Northern hemisphere, they move in a clockwise direction. So mark the extent of the first shadow, wait 10 minutes, the second stick, draw a line through, you've got an east-west line. So you're familiar with that, I guess. If you're lucky enough to have a watch, you can aim the hour hand at the sun by setting the angle 12, again, a north-south line. It's so important, and the prevailing wind. In this country, it is southwesterlies. Okay, so you could look at the landscape and see sand dunes, snow drifts, plants, all affected by the prevailing wind. So if you know the direction, you can use this as a navigation aid. Again, in the Middle East, you get local breezes. The sea is constant temperature through the night, and what happens, like, as the sun comes up, the land, the heat rises off the land, and it blows out to a cooler sea. But overnight, as the land cools down, the sea is hotter than the land, the breezes come back inshore. So by keeping the breeze into your face, you're heading for the coast. You've got to know where you're operating, you know, and know which direction safety is. But this is the art of survival navigation. Carry a compass. It saves all this hassle and death. But always retain orientation. Now, and overall, we've done food, fire, shelter, water, navigation. Medical is so important. We should always have a medical knowledge. The more I know about things, how to deal with trauma, the safer I'm going to be. Also, what to carry. Don't have to be a big pack, just enough to see you through. So medical is very, very important, and look after yourself. Don't let the situation deteriorate. If you've got a blister, stop, deal with it straight away. Don't let it go septic, keep on going. As soon as you've got it, stop, deal with it, end the story. If you try to walk through it, it's going to get infected, you're going to get a problem. So medical knowledge is never wasted. So basically, I've run through, like, hopefully, the mental side of survival, saying how important it is never giving in. Okay, the will to live, we've all got it. It's getting weaker as we're getting more and more civilized, but never giving in. A victory will come in time. Eliminate all the doubts in your mind by saying, I've prepared myself, I've got as much knowledge, I can deal with any situation. This way I will not be caught out. Knowing what to expect, I can deal with it. Always expect the unexpected. Okay, and this way, I'm going to breeze through life. Also, if you know what you like when you're hungry, tired, thirsty, could you still make decisions, etc. So know everything you can about yourself. Have a mate. You need a mate in survival. And he's going to use you the same way as you're going to use him. Okay? So always stick together. I'm just about finished, I think. Is that okay?
Straight into the questions and answers session. So if anyone has any questions, if you pop your hand up, we'll try and get that answered for you.
Okay. One at a time.
Yeah. Have you ever been in a non-military situation where you've had to use your survival skills?
Yeah, I've travelled the world. When I left the army, I ran a survival school. We done expeditions in Kathmandu, Alaska, Africa, Oman, and things always go wrong, especially around water. Yeah, the moment you go rafting, canoeing, whitewater rapids, someone always falls out of the boat, someone always is missing, someone always chops herself. I've got to mention about knives. I see so many knives today, brilliant. Always cut towards your mate. Okay, remember that one. Too many people are like this, don't do it, you know, I cringe. And my wife, she put sharp knives in washing up water. The times you dive in, you've all done it. That knife, when it's not being used, in your sheath, don't leave it in the side, you know. But there's always drama. And up in, on McKinley it was, you're dependent on the guy coming in 7,000 feet in an aircraft. Well, the weather turns, you know, and sometimes you'd be there for a fortnight. There's loads of foods up there that people have caches. You finish up diving in their cages, quite honestly. And you replace it if you can. But, yeah, I've been stuck. I try and plan things, but there's always the unexpected. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
And the most dangerous thing I've ever did was answer the mother-in-law back. I've got to tell you that one. Yeah. And the worst thing I ever ate was mother-in-law's cooking. Yeah.
What's the hardest thing?
The hardest? Probably giving a lecture in a tent. What, in survival? Yeah, being thirsty, I guess. Going without food is one thing, you get used to it, you know, and you get to a point where your body don't want food. Now, it's the same with water. The more you go in that water, you go through the thirst stages, and then the tongue goes furry. And severe dehydration is, you know, when you put your hands in washing up water for a long time and they go all crinkly, the whole skin goes like that. That is the advanced stages of dehydration. You get to a stage, because the mental process is conducted in a saline solution, you don't think right. And someone could put water in front of you, but unless someone actually administers the water, you won't realise what it's for. So this is the danger, you know, of letting yourself go too much. I've got certain, like, safety valves. And when I talk, I get a ringing in my ear when I need water. And also when I'm cold, my kidneys. So I always do something about it there and then. Get me, don't let it deteriorate. And that's probably the hardest thing. Going without water, yeah. What do you want to pay for a glass of water when you're thirsty? Yeah, cheers, right? I think it affects most people. You know, you feel dry. I get a ringing in my ear. Does anyone else do this? Like, I get my voice reverberating. But my ears, they're knackered from the army, firing things and firing aircraft, you know. But it affects my ears. I can feel it now. It's like an echo. But that's just me. Too much chlorine.
Ray Mears or Bear Grylls? Which one? Answer the question, we all need to answer it.
I could eat the pound of them. I've never met either of them, but I've got many, many stories of them. And I would say Ray Mears could not survive in Tesco's. Bear Grylls is an idiot. Yeah. You want someone in between. Now, Ray Mears is great. He's like a big schoolboy to me. And I was asked to critique one of his books. And on the cover, he's got a big box. And he sat on there in some exotic country. And I was highly critical. And I said, I hope that's not his survival. I was taking a mickey, you know. I hope that's not his survival tent. It's dovetailed. And he had like a tablecloth. And someone wrote in and said, you're jealous of him. I probably am. You know, but the way he dresses, the way he does things, it don't ring true. He's the wrong shape for survival. I would love to be on an island with him. I've been living off him for years. And Bear Grylls is an adventurer. He's the chief Boy Scout now. And he was in 21 SAS. And he climbed Everest. So I can't take that away from him. It's a great achievement. But the things he does on telly, he should be banned. He picked a snake up, ate it. Snakes are full of salmonella, you know. And all different things like this. He's got a perfectly good pair of skis and he throws one away. You know, I can't believe it. And he does stupid things. He dives into water. You don't know what's in there. And it's real dangerous when I watch and I cringe. And it's like the other guy, he's a tremendous guy. Remember the Australian guy, Irwin? Was it Irwin? He's a great bloke, fearless. He put his hand in holes, which I would never do. And he jumped in a pool. No, there's a crocodile in there. I would throw me missus in first, honest, you know. But he come unstuck. A chance in a million, he got stung by the stingray. And I say, serve you right. He's a lovely bloke, but unfortunate, you know. So out of the two, like I say, if I was younger, well, even now, I would say, let's go on a desert island with nothing. See what comes off a desert island. I'll be about 18 stones, I'll tell you. Yeah. He's not in the audience, is he?
A situation where you thought you're not going to get out of?
I'm going to tell you a story to conclude. In Borneo, four-man patrol, we've done cross-border ops into Indonesia. I'm not giving away secrets, it's all been published now, you know. And we had a contact over a border, and the first thing happens, we're four men, very limited ammunition, and so put down as much fire as you can, or lose as much weight and ammunition as you can, before running. And we used 20 clicks over the border, big contact, and there was always patrols, many times greater than ours. So shoot and scoot was a policy. First thing you do, you run faster, you get rid of your burger. That's got all your food in. So that goes, your sleeping kit, gone, and you can run a lot faster. And I say, we never panic, but you can't go straight back to the border because they're going to ambush that. Mortar fire's coming in, shells coming in. And so we deviate. And this time we deviated a bit further than normal. And we're starving hungry. We've got 2 days of emergency supply and a belt, but that soon goes. And all it was a meat block, maybe a tube of cheese, that was all. So once that's gone, it's not like a Tarzan film where he's picking pineapples, all the exotic fruit. And it's surprising how much ground you cover when you're being chased, you know, the old adrenaline. So anyway, we got to the DZ on our side of the border now to be picked up. And we thought we outstripped the enemy. And we're absolutely starving. And we dialed up the RAF. Anyone in the RAF at all? Okay, we dialed up the RAF on a Monday. Come and get us. Sorry, just getting over the weekend. Tuesday, they look at the sky, there's a cloud. Oh, can't fly today. Wednesday, sports afternoon, no chance. Thursday, they wheel the aircraft out. They always find an oil leak or something. Friday, they're getting ready for the weekend, so they've got no chance. So we've been running now for 8 days. We got to the DZ, 5 days on the DZ, and all we found to eat was big white snails. We fried them, baked them, curried them, had them raw. Don't know what we've done, you know, they still tasted bland. And when the aircraft then to come in finally to rescue us, we was too slow to get on the aircraft. Because we had all the snails. Yeah, that was a good one. But,
okay, I think we'll take a break now.
Whatever. Yeah. I'm fine now. Go on, keep on going. Yeah. Keep on going.
Have some more questions, guys?
Yeah.
Is there ever a time you preferred that you had done gardening rather than survival stuff?
I had a great time when I left the army. I ran a survival school. I met so many interesting people. And I learned more from them than I think they learned from me, you know. It's always a two-way thing. And everyone's got different aspects of that. And I had every walk of life from, I had a magician, a belly dancer, a professional ballroom slinger thrower, you know. It was incredible. I'm glad I'd done it. But when I left the army, I promised myself, no more sleeping bags, no more eating out of mess tins. It's going to be five-star hotels. I ran the survival school. I was sleeping under hedgerows. Eating out of tin cans, you know, so. But it makes you humble. I appreciate everything. If I can turn a light on, it's such a pleasure. And get water from a tap. We take all this for granted, you know. But I spent most of my life outdoors, I guess. And so I still appreciate things like that. And electricity, no matter how you explain it, it's magic. It's a gift given to us. And what we would do about it, you know what I mean? So I'm glad I've done what I did. It's good I tell me kids all this, how good I was and all this, you know what I mean? But it's never wasted. And it's good to see children here, what they learned at this age. It put them through good for all their life, you know. And I say, turn the telly off. Television is chewing gum for the eyes, okay? Introduce them to nature. Show them what trees, what they're called, how you can use them. And this way, they're going to be safe all their life, you know. So it's never wasted. It's the best insurance policy you can take out of it. So I'm glad I've done it, and I hope I keep on surviving to 158, remember. I've got a nice garden, yeah. But I've got to make, cut grass from there. I've got a director now. Yeah.
Can I ask a question? On a lighter note, what if you don't have a mate with you when you're in a survival situation?
Say again?
What is if it? You don't have a mate when you're in a survival
situation? I dream, I've got a good imagination. You start talking to yourself, you know. Did you see, you shipped out to an island, the end old.
Castaway.
Castaway, that was it. Yeah, you make friends with a palm tree or something.
I think he was going to mention something about isolation and loneliness and stuff.
Okay.
What about that?
The only person you can rely on is yourself. So you must be comfortable in your own company. I love company. But I like being on my own at times. And so you must get used to it. By working together, in like 4-member trolls in the army, there's always someone off colour. You know, that day he's had drunk the wrong sort of water, something's upset him, got a headache and not had a good night's sleep. And so you help each other out. And but you mustn't rely on other people. It's great to help each other out, but you must have the ability to stand on your own two feet and say, regardless, it's nice to have a mate, that's a bonus, but you must have the ability to like your own company as well and practice it. You know, some people can't go out on their own. And like I say, it's a fear and a phobia. And one of the best things on a survival course is to get someone over their fear or phobia. You know, I used to keep a snake. The amount of people didn't like snakes and that. Once they understand the animal, they can handle it and they get to like it, you know. Know all about yourself, and it's nice to have someone you can bounce off. And if you're feeling down, they can help you. But again, stand on your own two feet. Fear your own weaknesses, what I mentioned. And try and have a good all-round performance. And consider any outside help a bonus.
Is there anyone that inspired you?
Yeah, surely. When I joined the army, like I say, I was 17 and a half, snotty nose kid. I joined the army, I had a teddy boy suit on, nowhere, and a carrier bag. That was all my possessions. And all my instructors in the paras, they was all ex-wartime, and they were supermen, real hard men, you know, captured at Arnhem, wounded, and they was inspirational. And I looked up to them. And I realised, although I didn't like it, I never looked back, because you've got to have that sort of discipline instilled. So when they say jump, you jump. And I was more scared standing in that door of an aircraft and refusing than jumping through the door. It was a coward's option, jumping, you know. And when I joined the regiment, the initial guys were good, hard-drinking men. There was all people, misfits in their own units, and they was glad to get out of it. And they was like running away, if you like. And they were super people. They weren't very educated. And when they brought education, you had to have it to get promoted. These guys would never pass. But what they didn't know about soldiering, and that's real, that was my inspiration, you know. And they taught me everything I know. And I looked up to them, you know. Super guys, a bloke called Mo Copeman. He could produce water from that speaker, you know what I mean? And it's people like that. And I had the privilege of being with them, I guess, you know. So I owe it all to them. I really appreciate what they done for me and looked after me, you know. But the worrying thing for me, from being the youngest, I've become the oldest. And I went to a reunion not long ago. I was the longest serving member, you know. So time's up.
If you're in a group situation and half the group wants to do one thing and you know they're doing the wrong thing, what do you do?
Give them a slap. Okay, leadership. A good leader, he makes sure that don't happen. You're always going to, everyone's got an opinion, but you treat everyone the same, and someone's got to take charge. And normally, it's the man who's got the most knowledge, or the person who's got the most knowledge. And I see these programs on telly where they've got tasks to do, but it's all scripted to make it. They don't want to see harmony because it'd be boring. But what I want to do, I want to make everything as easy as possible, you know. So I try and shoot for the eyes of the people, the fit people, get them out foraging. The more sort of the older or any illnesses or injured, keep them in camp doing a fire. Give everyone responsibility. That way, if everyone's busy, they've got less time to argue, you know. And so a good leader sees for the eye of the group, delegates responsibilities, is scrupulously fair, shares everything. And again, I failed to mention, after the incident, first thing, call the roll, make sure everyone's accounted for, and then treat the injured, and then pool resources. Now, if I've got a bar of chocolate and you've got nothing, you'll leave me opening that chocolate miles away. So we pool resources, you know. Otherwise, you just lose it. You mustn't favourite anyone. But again, we're all different, and everyone's got to be treated different. And I think the more experience you've got, the better you are to do that, you know. You're going to suffer some people, others are inspirational, you know. A good leader sees this and he uses everyone. Everyone's got a use, no matter who they are. So a good leader gets that from them. Does that answer your question?
Absolutely, yeah.
Super. I believe we have a question at the back there, gentleman in blue. Have
you seen the people? Have you learned a lot from them, or with a lot of it military training you've received?
What? Say again, sorry.
Indigenous people, did you learn a lot from indigenous people?
Indigenous. Okay, I learned the survival with indigenous people. You know, it's the only way to learn. Now, man lives throughout the earth, either by choice or to gain mineral wealth, you know. And so look what the locals do. See what they eat, what they drink, you know, how they build a shelter, how they keep warm. And this is how you learn. You know, them people have been doing it for years, and we've just, there's nothing new in survival. It's all forgotten arts. We all used to be able to do it, but now we don't have to get out of the chair now to turn the telly over, you know. So we are getting weaker. This will to live is getting weaker in the fact that everything's being done for us, you know, whereas before everything was like manual. I mean, they dug canals by hand, things like this, you know. So look at the locals, and we are getting softer as we're getting more civilised. So, yeah. And the locals now, forgotten arts, unless they practice, and there are lots of people now, you know, different tribes, they do teach their forgotten arts. So hopefully it's carried on. But that's the way to learn survival, definitely.
Ray
Mears then? Ray. Ray had me booked from an early age, you know. Ray was never in the military, and he learnt from my book. So.
Okay, I think we just do two more questions. There was another hand at the back there, gentleman in blue there.
Delta Force.
How does Delta Force compare to the SAS?
They're good guys, slightly different role. In the States, you've got the FBI, you've got Secret Service, you've got Texas Ranger, you've got all these organisations which are only responsible for like their own counties, mainland, but Delta Force was outside the country, you know. Good guys, selection, and Charlie Beckwith was the guy who created them. What happened with Charlie was, after he left us, he survived, he went back to America, and he badgered their Congress to form a unit like the SAS. They had the Green Beret, which is slightly different, Special Forces, but they didn't have an SAS. So they got fed up with him in the Pentagon, and he got shipped out to Vietnam. Now he weighed, he's building up his weight now, but all of a sudden he put on a lot of weight, because he got 19 bits of shrapnel in him. He's in the contact, and he got riddled with bullet shrapnel shells, you know, and he got casualty back to the States. And while he was recovering, he actually camped in their War Department. And they got fed up stepping over him, and he kept on saying, you know, and finally they gave him the go-ahead, and he formed Delta Force. Now, when he started, he tried to run it on our lines, and in the States, they've got a thing where if you fail and I pass, that's human rights, so you cannot fail. You know what I mean? So their selection was very difficult. And he devised a swimming course, which Johnny Weissmuller wouldn't pass. And what he'd done, he kept a lot of people out. And that's how he done it. But they're good guys, yeah. And the SEALs, you remember, the SEALs, Americans are excellent. Individuals, they're the best. Collectively, they learn a lot to be desired, you know. But we're going the same way, you know. But we've had it, you know. We used to beg, borrow, and steal everything from them. And technically, you can't beat them, you know.
Okay, one last question from the floor, guys.
Do you still practice your survival skills, or is it five-star hotels only?
Six-star now, yeah. I've got my mate to look after me, you know. Yeah, you've got to practice what you preach. I do like the outdoors. I tell you what, it's been a real pleasure coming here today. I've been away from it for so long. I still write, I can talk. The only thing that works on me is my tongue, really, you know. And it's a pleasure to be here, you know. It's a compliment to Simon. It's fantastic. And I'm so glad it's so active and everyone, you know, all these skills here, you know, I could learn so much here, you know, what I have done already. So it's lovely to come back. And I know I still try and practice my skills, just basic things. I always look for an escape route, you know. I never sit with me back to the waiter, you know, things like this, you know. Don't sit by a rubbish bin, you know. And I tell my missus, it winds her up. Oh, you always say that. And she's looking over her shoulder now. I don't want to wind people up, but give yourself a chance, you know. And I'm always early. I'd rather get to a place and sit down and have a cup of tea than be rushed. So we arrive at the airport hours early. Wait a minute, so early, you know. And, you know what it's like? Yeah. You can't help it. You can't help it. I like your hair, by the way.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Great privilege to have you with us.